Welcome to the Catbird Speaks, the podcast for the White Sox Sweet Spot blog on ESPN, the Catbird Seat. I've already talked about we're on the White Sox, right? We covered that part? Anyway, we are doing kind of a season ender, September dog days. Why are we even watching games anymore? Let's go over the list of reasons. Type of wrap up with Ethan Spaulding joining us from Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi. I have a little bit of a cold today, so I apologize. My voice sounds worse than usual.
And friend of the show, frequent guest, and very avid U.S. men's national team fan, Mauricio Rubio.
Okay, so first off, you send me a chat question about Chipotle in my chat, and you call me a USMNT fan?
I kind of already given up the fact that you're going to punch me when we see each other.
So one of us is going to die. Someone's going to die, basically.
You said both of you are going to die at a bar.
One of us is going to kill the other, and then the other one's going to get murdered by...
USMNT fans, for yeah. Sure.
Someone who's going to get off on the case.
Wow. That was overly heavy for an ESPN podcast, I feel like.
Well, you know, we were talking about... Here's a question, Mal. It's kind of topical. Have you ever scrapped on the job?
You know, I did once. Nobody saw it. None of the managers saw it. But it was probably the most blue-collar job that I ever had. I got into a fight behind the deli counter. And a punch was thrown. And a punch was landed. And there may or may not have been tears. And then when I was done crying... I held on to my job.
I fought with a dude when I was 16.
The closest thing I've ever been into a fight is I once started. Some dude was in my dorm after the Wisconsin basketball team clinched a spot to the Final Four, and he was just being an ass, and I wanted him to leave. He wouldn't leave my room, so I started shoving him against a wall.
So does that mean this was like 6 months ago?
No, this was the first time we went to the Final Four. This was my freshman year.
Okay.
I've never really been in a fight.
Jesus Christ. Well, the thing they don't tell you about fights is that if you're in enough of them, eventually you get your ass kicked really, really bad. bad.
That's a good thing about fights?
It's also the worst thing about fights.
How is there anything good about that?
There's something good about it because you no longer walk into a bar and think you can kick everybody's ass. So for some guys, it can be good. It's very, very small. The cost benefit is not high, but some guys kind of need it.
This is a great scouting information. This is why we had you on the podcast.
Mal, you know, you write about baseball, professionally. What are the White Sox playoff chances, do you think, going forward for the season?
I think it's zero, Jim.
Is it zero?
I think there's definitely a zero in front of whatever minuscule number follows the point.
Well, they were eliminated from contention, right? Like, they're officially...
I haven't been paying close enough attention to the wins and losses.
I'm pretty sure they were officially eliminated, so the only chance they make the playoffs is if, like, a bunch of teams get in... plane crashes.
Well, how many plane crashes would it need? Six?
Yeah.
No, I think the Sox are, I think they have the third worst record in the AL, right?
It's close to there. I've been lying when I say I haven't been monitoring the wins and losses. I've been, like, frequently going to the all-league view and sorting backwards and then counting that. And that's how I've been monitoring their wins and losses.
Yeah, they would do well to not finish ahead of Detroit this year.
It would be good to do that. Yeah. It'd be good to get a high draft pick.
Yeah, and particularly one that's protected, though that seems like it's pretty likely at this point.
Yeah.
Because Boston decided to start winning.
Boston decided to start winning at the best possible time for a team like Boston, who is importing all sorts of brain trust into it. All smart baseball minds started flocking to Boston, and they decided to start winning just to take them outside of a top 10 pick, which is great.
Yep, and they'll still be right because they got Dombrowski.
Yeah.
They've hired a lot of guys.
Frank Wren, Dombrowski. Who's the other guy? Hazen?
Yeah.
Just a buttload of smart dudes.
Didn't they have, like, DePoto? Am I crazy that they have him on for, like, as a consultant?
DePoto's going... He just got hired
by the Mariners.
Yeah. DePoto was a consultant. I think you're right.
But now he's a Mariners GM, which is a nice hire for them, I guess.
Yeah, that's good.
It's better than Jack Z.
Jack Z is going to be known as the dude who wasted Felix Hernandez.
Let's hope that Rick Hahn doesn't get known as the dude who wasted Chris Sale.
It's terrifying how quickly my mind and Ethan's mind went to that. Because that was a very real concern.
Though I don't think it's Rick Hahn's fault that Chris Sale's wasted. Rick Hahn took over a team, and immediately after he took it over, it had the worst farm system in baseball, and it lost 99 games. That's something.
That's 5 years away type deal. Like, given the current free agent scope.
If they make the playoffs before 2018, it's a success by Rick Hahn, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just so many. I mean, you saw it this year. There's just so many holes that you have to plug in that you can bring in all the free agents that you want. But if you have three completely empty position players when it comes to offense and just a bullpen and rotation where your margin for error is super slim, it's, you know, if one thing goes wrong, the whole thing goes wrong. So
it's. And they came in with three empty players and then it got worse as the season went on. Like, Melky's been fine, but he's been below average offensively, and he's not a defensive whiz, so you can't excuse that. That's a bad year for him, even though I'm a little bit confident for him next year. Avi is he's below average and about as bad of a right fielder as there exists.
Solidly below average. He doesn't even hit lefties particularly well.
No, he gives you that every once in a while. He'll give you a really big home run, but otherwise it's a bunch of singles and strikeouts.
Yeah,
they came in as a team that we, being idiots, thought could make the playoffs.
And they look a lot better if Adam LaRoche isn't the worst player in baseball, and Avi Garcia isn't the worst player in baseball.
Well, honestly, I was just saying, like, the things we considered like breaks that needed to break right for them, like Samardzija, the Melky signing, the LaRoche signing, Zach Duke, even a Dan Jennings was like one of their offseason acquisitions. I can't think of any of these things that even like met expectations.
And Alexis plummeted too.
You also have to take into consideration that offense was completely dead for the first month, right? Like you had Eaton and Melky Cabrera just turning in historically bad seasons. And, you know, that puts you in a really tough position already coming right out of the gate. You know, it makes the calculus for what you want to do at the trade deadline different. And they didn't do anything to add or sell off. And they completely stayed put. So now you're just talking about a situation where the first part of the season and just like coming right out of the gate really made it difficult to get back into the race. And then, as we just saw, like it just didn't come around. And too many things went wrong in April and May, including bad Chris Sale. And you couldn't get over that.
And Chris Sale came back for some reason, but I feel like we can get back to that later. We could probably stick on the offense for a little bit. I mean, the thing with if there's so many holes to plug in going forward too, because like you're sure Abreu's good. I'm pretty sure. I'm comfortable saying Adam Eaton is one of the best center fielders in baseball. And one of the best leadoff hitters in baseball. That dude really hits.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're sure of those two things. Melky Cabrera will be on this team next year, and he'll probably be solid.
He probably won't be in a first-place platoon with Adam LaRoche. Just putting that out there.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
Yeah, there's an article that suggested it, but we can move on from that. If I had to project Melky out, I'd say he's probably like a moderately above average hitter next year. Basically what he's been, if you slice off his April, I'll basically take that Melky, which is fine. You can live with that, even though it's not a great player considering his defense. can probably live with catcher. If Flowers is really as good at framing as the numbers say he is, and he's as good with at working with pitchers as the numbers say he is, unless you really want to spend money on, like, Matt Wieters, you could probably live with Flowers and a backup. But everything else, like, what do you do with it?
Carlos Sanchez is basically okay the second half of the year.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, I'm just not excited about that.
I'm not excited, but I think you have so many holes that, like, this might not be terrible is, like, better than some of your other options.
If you're expecting to be a playoff team, Carlos Sanchez better be the worst or the second worst hitter in your lineup.
Like, yeah, and it's already cutting it real close with whatever you're doing at third base, Tyler Flowers and Carlos Sanchez. Like, it's,
right. If Carlos Sanchez, if this team considers itself a playoff contender next year, Carlos Sanchez can be on the team, but that means they need to have a good third baseman. You can probably live with Tyler Flowers and Sanchez on the same team, but then you can't have LaRocha DH, you can't have Carlos Sanchez, or you can't have Tyler Saladino at third, and you can't have Avi in right. Probably can't have Trace in right either.
So there's enough momentum, or at least current, that some beat writers have written about it, but about Tyler Saladino being a cheap replacement for, or bridge for, Alexi Ramirez. The idea, frankly, kind of horrifies me.
He's so bad.
It's not great. Speaking from what his prospect profile was, and I got a glimpse of him in spring training this year. It's a utility role when you really think about it at the highest level. And you can't be the team that has Saladino and Carlos Sanchez. You gotta not do that.
The concession there is like, oh, Alexi's bad, it's toast anyway, so what's the difference?
Well, the difference is that, like, you're still bad. You're right, there is no difference. You don't get better.
And Tyler Saladino is not a defensive upgrade over Alexi Ramirez.
No.
Unless Alexi Ramirez likes to be April Alexi Ramirez defensively. Like, basically, like, he's basically gone back to the same shortstop we've always seen here, maybe with a little bit less range, but he's still a pretty elite glove man short. Tyler Saladino has a nice third base glove, but I don't know if he's going to give you that plus defense at short.
He doesn't have the quick twitch to, like, really handle that.
So, since no one will actually argue this in good faith, I guess I'll have to, like, be devil's advocate just so I can lay it out. I guess the idea would be that you decline or you get rid of Alexi Ramirez's option. I don't like just purging talented players for the hell of it. So I prefer if they were doing that, they would, like, try to trade him for something. And you use that $10 million to throw at your losing Jason Hayward bid or something like that.
I mean, that's fine. I mean, you still can't have an infield of Jose Abreu, Carlos Sanchez, Tyler Saladino, and you know who the hell plays third. But, I mean, if you want to do that... And Michael, yeah, Jesus. If you want to do that, maybe you could, like... I don't know. I've thought about maybe, like, Ian Desmond.
You know, that's not terrible, but...
He's been pretty terrible.
Yeah, it's just...
Neil Walker's skulking around tonight, looking okay.
I actually think that would be all right if you got Neil Walker and started plugging him in places where you have needs. Like, I think that's okay. And the only thing that really worries with me about the infield construction as is, and why I would think and I would hope that the White Sox add an infielder, is, you know, Tim Anderson sitting there in Double-A, and he had a really good year and made a lot of progress. If they get itchy with that and feel like they're in it and feel like they have a need on the infield, I just don't want that to come up too soon, because I think that's a guy where if you bring him up too soon, it'll mess him up, and that's that. And the White Sox have a history of doing that,
where your bridge to him is really, really bad, and you get as eager to bring him up as possible.
Yeah, basically the bridge just has diarrhea down his pant legs, and you're like, I can't play this anymore.
This is a really weird metaphor with a bridge.
If I'm building this team to be a contender, I really want two infielders and an outfielder or a DH. Like, there's so much it needs, and Desmond's been better than I thought. After he was just putrid to start the year, he's been mostly his own old self. If you have any confidence he might bring back that power a little bit, he's a really solid player, and also your best player. He's probably your fourth best position player on the team as is, or third best. And that's pretty sad because he's a 1.5 win player right now.
Yeah.
But that's the state of this org right now.
Matt, where do you think MLB.com number 14 White Sox prospect Trace Thompson could play in this mix?
I don't know. You would recall the time on Twitter where we kept tweeting out his stats, and I think Ethan was chiming in on this, and I just kept saying, I love the athleticism. Really, really love the athleticism. And now that he's here and actually performing at Major League Baseball, I'm starting to get really nervous because, like, I don't want to jump in all in on him, but I also just really like the profile and am willing to jump all in on him. Like, if I make the bet on Trace Thompson and start him out in the outfield, I won't feel bad if it goes bad. You know what I mean? Because, you know, like, that's a tooled-up dude. That's a guy who, you know, it's his time to start producing at Major League Baseball. And if he's not going to produce, then you got to figure that out pretty soon. And if he's not a producer, then what, it doesn't cost you anything. And you're going to be able to figure that one out pretty quick. Now, just in terms of what his profile is, he's jacked in terms of tools. And he's had a really long journey to the majors with all sorts of mostly downs, but ups and downs. And, you know, now that he's here, I think you got to start him.
It's not like he's been getting cheapies with his, like, he's putting up big numbers, and a lot of times you get wary of a guy in August, September putting up big numbers, just like, oh, he's facing weak pitching, he's getting a bunch of singles. I mean, more than half of his hits are extra base hits.
And he's turning on it.
He's got five homers. He looks good, and his plate approach looks way better than anything I expected from what I had read about him. I had never seen him in the minors, but, like, I expected him to basically be a guy who almost strikes out at Javi Baez-type levels, but he's striking out in the fifth of his plate appearances, which is totally fine for a guy with that defensive profile and a guy who's hitting the ball as far as he's hitting it right now. That looks like a major league player right now.
Yeah, I mean, inevitably, you're going to have to deal with the Adam Eaton injury, right? Like, at some point, he's going to run into a wall and get hurt. So, I mean, you got to have him with the big league, and you got to start him. I can't see the rationale for not starting him over Avisio Garcia. And this is coming from someone who really loved Avisio and wanted that to work.
As good of a bet to run into a wall as Adam Eaton.
Yeah.
He's probably going to turn out better from it.
Is Trace a better center fielder defensively than Eaton?
I think Eaton's a lot better with his routes. But I think Trace has the athleticism that if he plays it, if he starts playing it a lot more regularly, he can get there.
It'd be nice to have both those guys in your outfield, considering what we've seen over the last years.
Oh, yeah. If you have Eaton and Trace Thompson in your outfield, it makes playing Melky Cabrera or Garcia, however you want to do that, just better. Just makes it better.
I personally don't want Avi Garcia on this roster next year. I don't know. Yeah.
He doesn't have a clear bench role. I don't know what, like, he doesn't excel at anything enough to really have, like, a single purpose.
He'd basically be like the Paul Konerko bench role, but without the sentimentalism and the ability to play right field instead of first base.
Yeah. Or the ability to hit lefties.
So not the Paul Konerko bench role.
I was just saying that he sucks, but
just as much sadness, sucks. I guess.
Yeah. Were you there at the last game?
I was there, not the absolute last game, but like where the game where they unveiled his statue.
Oh, okay.
That was some sad shit. He didn't have a prayer up there.
No.
Like, everyone is just like, he got to like a 3-ball count, and there's just like a prayer that he might reach base, and it was just...
He was so done by the end of that.
The guy just like challenged him down the pipe twice in a row, and he just could barely get a bat on it. It was like, oh, this is fucked.
That was the last game the Royals lost before the World Series, though, right?
Yeah, that was it. I remember that. Yeah, he was cooked. That was, wow, you're bringing back all sorts of bad memories now.
I felt like
he had a 500s OPS last year.
So bad.
We're just all standing and cheering for him. It just felt like 40,000 people trying to, like, lift this unimaginably heavy weight out of the river, and it just kept sliding down.
If Chris Sale has a good start in his last start of the year, a start good enough for 0.5 Fangraphs WAR, which, like, Chris Sale has had starts that good. If he has that good of a start, he will pass Paul Konerko in career Fangraphs WAR.
Jesus.
Yeah.
How long until he passes Mike Cameron?
Mike Cameron has... A lot of people don't realize that Mike Cameron was probably a much better player than Paul Konerko.
I realize it.
Yeah, Mike Cameron was the truth in center field. He was my favorite center fielder for a long time.
Well, the White Sox so uniquely bad. I mean, I guess this doesn't even out because they're also bad at developing center fielders who are even playable. But are they so bad at developing any offense that kind of like someone who can sit anywhere in the lineup and do like a 900 OPS is very valuable for them?
But when the Sox got Konerko, they were hitting the shit out of the ball. It's not like...
originally. Then he like the last like 8 years of his career, or 6 years of his prime, he was kind of like a lone wolf.
Yeah. I mean, that like from 2000 to 2008, Paul Konerko, I mean, the White Sox had a pretty good offense every year except 07. And like they had a good offense in 08. It was after that where they kind of died, and that's when Konerko turned into like late career superstar. Like his last 3 or 4 years were basically like an aging Hall of Famer's last few years.
They were solidly below average in 05. And also when Konerko like went down in like his later years, they would play like Brent Lillibridge at first base. Like they wouldn't have another first baseman or even a replacement level first baseman to trot out there.
Don't
they would
say
literally
that name.
Just put a utility infielder.
Don't say that name. That's a bad name.
Thrillibridge.
He out-homered Adam Dunn in 2011. I'll always remember that.
Yeah, that was one of the worst. Isn't that the worst offensive season ever in baseball history?
I think there have been worse,
like
by
Alex
people.
Rios that year.
Yeah, I think Alex Rios might have had a worse weighted run created plus that year. It was the worst. It was one of the worst seasons by WAR because he was a no defense DH who hit like a elite fielding, like a absolutely amazing, like Andrelton Simmons levels fielding shortstop. Him and Rios had the same weighted run created plus that year at 60.
Oh my god, how did anybody live through that? How?
Because I don't know.
That was like that's so bad.
That offense, just so you know, that offense had 9.8 F4 on the year. This year's offense has 3.0. So that offense was so much better than this offense.
I definitely wrote serious, clear-eyed, might as well play Lillibridge more articles during that season.
Well, you might as well have played Lillibridge more. As he kept sending out Dunn.
This is a guy who, like, the previous year had gotten cut off the roster in favor of Jason Nix.
Oh, man. Really,
man,
poor spelling
so
on
many
Jason.
Bad White Sox names. We're going to look back at Connor Gillespie in like 5 years, just like, Jesus Christ, remember that?
Would kick you if I could.
J.B. Shuck. Remember when J.B. Shuck was going to be the savior coming out of the
Remember when J.B. Shuck actually played pretty well? He's had a good year.
He's been all right, but people who got like really excited about the JP.
Oh, show. That he should play over Eden.
Yeah,
that was fun.
I mean,
he's gonna have a major league job next year. Good for him.
Yeah, he's all right.
It's weird to say the White Sox are too loaded in the outfield to play him, but I guess that's kind of the situation.
I I would rather have J.B. Shuck as a fourth outfielder than Avisail Garcia.
Well, yeah, because he could do things like get on base or run or defend a position.
Defending a position is really that's really all you need, honestly.
But like for fourth outfield, you want some guy who's like solid average at something and not just like below average at everything.
Yeah, if you want to stick in the majors, you need to do something at least to a 55 level. You can't just be trolling out there.
Avi looks like a baseball player to a 65 level at least.
He looks like a baseball player up until 7 o'clock. Then he doesn't.
I remember when he was first acquired, people were like just enamored with his batting practice displays of power.
Oh, I was, yeah. I fell in love. I will not shy away from that one. Guilty.
It's not even like he has the Javi Baez problem where he doesn't make enough contact. Like, he makes enough contact that if he showed any sort of power in games, like, he could be a... It's just that
when he does, it's awesome.
I know, and he doesn't ever is the thing. Like, he has fewer extra base hits, or maybe not anymore, but around the same amount of extra base hits as Carlos Sanchez.
He has 3 more extra base hits than Jose Abreu has home runs.
I've seen him, like, one-hand balls out to left 420 feet. I've seen him, like, turn 96-mile-an-hour Danny Salazar fastballs in, like, way gone in Cleveland to left field. And he does all these things individually, but I know that he's a terrible player. It's a really weird dichotomy. Like, I've seen him do amazing shit.
Not like Dayan Viciedo, where, like, you knew exactly, like, how bad Dayan was. And, like, he had his home runs, and you knew he would have his home runs, but, like, there wasn't really much else there. Like, you see these things. There seems to be more there with Avi, but at this point... It does. I don't think it's ever going to work. And then what's going to happen, obviously, is he's going to get traded to the Blue Jays, who are going to figure out something with his swing, and he's going to start hitting 35 bombs a year.
With a 230 average, though. Honestly, I'd be all right. I'd be happy. But, no, I think the thing with him is that he's got the hand-eye coordination to put the barrel on the ball. And, you know, he can, if he, when he gets fooled, he can make contact. But I just don't know if he picks the ball up well from a pitcher at all. Because I think back to those Indian games, you know, I think, you know, he was really seeing the ball well there, and I just don't think that there was a lot of deception with Salazar. I just don't think there was a lot of deception with what Salazar was doing. I think that when you see him hit the ball really well, it's because he's picking it up super well.
He hit the third 96-mile-an-hour fastball in a row that he had seen.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like...
It was cool in a vacuum, but I knew how he'd do it, did it?
Right.
So what's kind of the precedent for expecting Trace to have success? I mean, this is a guy... They're loud tools, but, like, it happens, I guess, where, like, you know, things come together in the majors just because that's the age they come together at. But I'm wondering, like, what percentile of actual hope of success I should have.
He's hitting way better than he has in any minor league stop in the majors right now.
It's a really small sample.
Yeah. I mean, it's a low percentage, and that's kind of where some of my trepidation comes in from. But, like, I don't know. It does happen. I think that the example everybody goes to is Elcides Escobar, who, you know, was hot garbage right up until he was 25, and then hit something like 293 and you know, kind of figured it out well enough to be a playable option there. I mean, that's not like a super good comp because Trace just has more upside when it comes to offense. But
also, Elcides is not having a good offensive year.
Nah, not this year.
But he's so good defensively.
He's really good defensively, and he finally figured it out to where you could play him without having the bat completely suck you out. So
probably shouldn't lead him off though, like they're doing so often.
No, it's a bad idea.
One thing, like, I was wondering if Trace could put off something like 2012 Alejandro Deaza did, because Alejandro Deaza had a pretty similar end to 2011 as Trace is having to 2015 right now. He came up and just started hitting the shit out of the ball, and he had more singles than Trace did and less extra base hits, but it's like he just hit the shit out of the ball, and then the next year they gave him the starting job off of that 50-game sample, and he did really solidly. Like, he was above league average bat, and if you can get league average out of Trace, you have that's a really nice thing that could happen.
Yeah, I think it can go a little higher than league average. I think that you can look at him and have him be productive relatively well. I think that if he hits something like 270, you're ecstatic, because that means the power is probably going to show up as well. But yeah, I don't know. This is a profile that I typically fall in love with, and it's a very dangerous one.
This is also a guy like that was ranked below like Jacob May and Courtney Hawkins in the system.
Oh, yeah, he was terrible.
He used to be the number two team prospect in the system, though.
Yeah, he had the highest upside for a very, very long time. Back in the days when Addison Russell was your top prospect, I think.
You mean Addison Reed?
Addison Reed. Not bad. How is Addison? Is he still alive? Is he pitching?
He's killing it with the Mets right now.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I forgot about that. Which is good, because I watched him die.
Yeah.
When
he was throwing freaking 89 in like the dog days of September in 2013,
because Robin sent him out for 71 innings in 2013,
he saved six games in a row.
Yeah,
with no days off,
he had 40 saves on a 63-win team.
Yeah,
when you think of like the stories of World War II about the abandoned Japanese soldiers with like bats defending like random far off islands because they don't realize the war's over.
Yep.
That's Addison Reed in 2013.
That's Reed. It's Reed for sure. Are we going to talk about the Robin thing later?
Robin? Should we bring him back?
No. I mean, I feel like that's fairly obvious. You shouldn't bring him back, but you will. I can't really see him getting fired.
Is it just like he's too like planted in with like ownership, or do you think they're just at a level where they are just seeding the tactical mishaps for some larger purpose?
This is what I want to know. I want to know what Rick Hahn and Jerry Reinsdorf talk about when they get together and talk about the manager.
I feel
that's
like
what I want to know.
Don't get said.
Yeah, I feel like it's real tense. Like there might be some passive aggressive might be some passive aggression directed towards Jerry when it comes to certain things. But I just can't see Jerry Reinsdorf firing Robin Ventura, because it's really hard for him to fire a dude. Just really hard for him.
He's been in his org for much longer than just the 3 years he's been manager.
Yeah, it's not Tom Thibodeau, you know what I mean? This is Pax. It's definitely Pax.
Yeah. Man. I still think it's... The Bulls got out of Tom Thibodeau, who was a great coach, because Jerry didn't want him anymore. The White Sox can't get out of terrible manager, Robin Ventura.
Because Jerry likes him.
And Robin's just... I want to know what people think Robin is good at. Like, I don't know what he's better than any typical manager. He's a terrible tactician. He seems like he does things that seem like the opposite of what the right move would do. He intentionally walks people too much. He uses his bullpen really weird.
He destroys arms. Just destroys arms.
Yeah, though we haven't seen any actual, other than Reed being dead at the end of that year, we haven't really seen much evidence of those arms having long-term negative effects, so I really hope that it doesn't start happening down the road to Sale, Quintana.
Can he act outside of, like, the approval of Don Cooper?
Yeah, that's why I kind of am not... That's why, of all things that I get mad at Robin for, I don't really get mad at him for the pitch counts, because I assume that if that's happening, like, if he was going to break Chris Sale, I think Don Cooper would kill him.
Like, yeah.
Is like Don Cooper protective of those guys and then kind of doesn't sweat it when Dan Jennings pitches like four innings in a freaking extra inning game?
Or Dan Webb has 60 pitches in a goddamn extra inning game.
60 pitches in two innings.
That was the worst. I saw him die. I saw him die. Definitely saw him die.
I mean, I don't think he was ever really alive. Like,
he had some life, but like that just went away very quickly after that.
He leaves relievers in extra innings like I leave the oven on after like cooking myself dinner.
Although last year it was like a little bit more excusable because that circus show that they had in the bullpen last year was terrifying. It was what, Michael Cladel, like it took you forever to figure out Zach Putnam was okay.
Is Michael Cladel still in the yard?
I don't know, but that is the straightest 100 miles an hour I've ever seen in my damn life. It's so straight, and you see it forever.
Holy shit, I really want Jason Hayward, guys. He just made another play. Oh, he might be hurt. No, never mind.
I think he hurt the field.
He's playing good center field defense now.
8 feet tall with perfect weight distribution.
That dude's so good.
He's very special. I don't think the Cardinals are... Yeah, I don't see the Cardinals giving him that money.
No, I don't think...
I think he's going to be a true professional when he declines the White Sox contract offer. He's going to like write a sincere letter back to Rick Hahn.
Does anyone remember that article years back that said Jason... it was a really bad article. It said Bryce Harper was the white conservative... Or said he was the conservative hope, and then it used Jason Hayward as the Democrat parallel, basically because he was black.
Who wrote that?
It was really, really bad.
I thought conservatives like defense.
Was it some sort of baseball crank, or like, who wrote that?
It was someone along that lines.
Don't conservatives like defense spending? That's Jason Hayward all the way.
It was on the Daily Caller. The headline is Bryce Harper, conservative hero. And it compared and contrasted Bryce Harper and Jason Hayward. Jason Hayward representing the Democrats and Barack Obama for no reason at all.
You know, the funny thing is that it's reverse. It's the other way.
Right. Well, he complains and says, oh, Jason Hayward dozing off in the outfield. Jason Hayward's the fucking best. He's so good. Yeah. And there's still room for the power to grow there, I think.
And yeah, go ahead.
A 26-year-old who, I mean, he definitely has flashed power in the past, and he's still like an above league average hitter. It's not like he's a bad hitter, but if that power ticks up, if he goes from being like a 14 home run guy to like back in 2012 when he hit 27 bombs with that defense, that's a damn superstar.
That's an MVP. Like, I'm just really glad everybody's backed off the 30 home run expectation. But yeah, I mean, there's still a little bit of room for some pop to be added in.
You're right. If he hits 20 home runs with that defensive profile, I mean, by weighted run created plus, he's 17% above league average as a 12 home run hitter. Like, yeah. And I mean, 17% above league average would be the second best hitter in the White Sox lineup already. Plus, you're talking about a generationally good corner outfielder defensively.
When he hits like the go-ahead single in the 11th inning of the NLCS and then guns out Starlin Castro at home in the bottom half of the inning, they end the series?
Well, they wouldn't play the Cubs in the NLCS.
It's the NLDS.
Damn it! This scenario isn't torturous enough.
And then he signs with the White Sox, is what you're saying?
No, I think he then is outside the White Sox price range.
Yeah,
I think then the Cubs go and sign him the first day possible.
That dude's getting almost $200 million, if not more, because of his age.
I think it would be absolutely hysterical if the Cubs signed Jason Hayward and not David Price. But I just think it'd be funny.
There would be a lot of people like, where's the pitching? Where's the pitching? I mean, the Cubs still need a center. They'd have to throw him in center field, but he's playing center field right now, and he looks awesome there because he's just a monster.
Abreu is still the biggest contract the White Sox have ever signed, right?
Yep, yeah, and I'm thinking to get Hayward, you need to triple that contract.
This is going to be a really funny podcast to look back on.
Why? Because of Jason Hayward's 5 AL MVPs with the White Sox?
Because when the money comes down, we're going to be like, oh, Jerry was never going to sign that.
5 years, 80 mil.
Yeah, I'm sure. It'd be really good.
Good thing they didn't sign Samardzija to 5 years, $80 million. I think that's probably what the, around what they offered them.
Yeah.
What the hell's wrong with Jeff Samardzija now?
I don't think he really liked the stand tall thing that Cooper was trying to give him. I think he's very set in his ways about how he wants to pitch. And I also think that his stuff took a step back. And just it didn't look as sharp or as crisp as I have seen it before. And the command that has always been sort of a wavering point, that's always been either very good to plus level or just absolutely terrible, was mainly terrible for all year. I mean, it's just a confluence of events that occurred, and he never got on track. Like, you Samardzija's profile is to have a bad spot or a rough patch and then kind of snap back into form and get more consistent with his mechanics and really stay on top of his pitches. And when he's good, the splitter and the slider are really working well off each other, and then he can always reach back and hit you with 97. Well, you know, this year the slider was just flat enough and the splitter didn't really do anything, so now you become overly reliant on a fastball and you don't really have anything else to show a hitter. They can really key in on you and just shred you. So it's just interesting that he showed just a brief flash of life and then never did again.
But even when he showed the flash of life, the strikeouts were never there this year.
No.
Coming into this year, he, in years since he'd become a starter with the Cubs, so 2012 on, 9.27, 9.01, 8.28 strikeouts per nine. It dipped to 6.96 this year.
Yeah.
Like, that's below league average, and especially when the rest of baseball is, the strikeout rates are going up. Plus, he stopped getting ground balls. He had a ground ball rate below 40%. He was just throwing a bunch of cement mixer sliders.
It was all the way bad. It was all the way bad. And I know that the walks are down, and people will kind of say to that and you know, question whether or not the command was bad. Like, that's,
oh great, Phil Hughes.
Yeah, right. That's not all that there is to command. Like, that's, you know, when you're talking about your walk rate being low, that's control. That's being able to throw strikes. But the accuracy that he had shown in long and extended prolonged extended periods last year, it wasn't there. And he was finding the middle of the plate too often.
And by the way, that Phil Hughes money's looking real bad right now.
A lot of money's looking real bad right now, but that one's especially funny. It's not Rick Porcello funny, but it's funny.
There was no point of extending Phil Hughes at all.
Well, they were at their lowest point of leverage in the negotiation, so that's when you have to start talking.
And, like, his walk rate's still astronomically low. His strikeout rate fell off the map, and he still is getting hammered on balls in the strike zone. He's so bad.
He just had his absolute career best season, and we have him signed for an affordable rate for years going forward. Let's talk to him right now.
You're basically hoping that he hits his FIP, too. Like, you're hoping that the fact that his ERA is way above his FIP is just a mirage, which it isn't with a guy like that, even though that's actually flip-flop this year. I mean, that dude just throws everything over the plate.
Right. That's one of those things where if it works for 1 year, you're like, that was cool. You're going to be my fifth starter next year. So that's going to work. That was like what John Lieber ran into. Everybody got all excited about the John Lieber 20-win thing. And then
it's funny because that's what I totally thought was going to be Jose Quintana after 2012.
Yeah.
No. Now he's one of the now he's a fringe two, elite three pitcher.
Well, he added shit to his profile too.
Yeah, the curveball came around in a big, big way.
And like, yeah, I mean, Jose Quintana is like Don Cooper's probably his best work, and Don Cooper's done a lot of great work.
Speaking of good work,
the Gavin Floyd thing was pretty cool too.
Yeah,
I mean, Quintana's way better than Floyd ever was.
So I wanted to take out some time to slobber over Rodon. Mal, how much have you seen of him down the stretch?
I've seen him quite a bit. He's my boy, as you well know. I hung a 70 on him in spring training, and I was a little nervous about it.
Like OFP or a slider?
OFP, and that's the slider is definitely 70. Yeah, I think he's going to be a two-starter, but I was perfectly willing to to forecast a future where he Francisco Liriano's career, which is something I believe I texted to you guys.
I think that was mine, yeah, actually.
No, that was your. Well, was it? Yeah, might have been. I don't know. Whatever it was, I agreed with it. but it's you know, his peripheral numbers are pretty much exactly what I was expecting coming out of this year. But the periods in which he's able to throw strikes have been more frequent and more exciting than I was thinking.
That game against the Indians was awesome. On the last pitch of the game to get Kipnis swinging.
Yeah, because he was just like, I can do this, and I'm just going to reach back and give it to you. And there's nothing you can do. Just nothing. And so, like, when you watch a starter, my favorite thing is when you watch a starter who's working in the game, and then he's slowly realizing that, you know, he can just fuck with these guys. Like, that's cool. And what Rodon was doing down the stretch in that Cleveland game was just fucking with people and just completely carving them up and putting them away.
The one Angels game where he got Pujols twice to strike out, and I think he got Trout once or twice with a couple of 90-mile-an-hour back foot sliders. That was something special.
Mm-hmm. He's, you know, you give him another pitch and you give him another year to really refine his command to the point where it's you know, not close to five, and if you can start getting that down to like the 3.5 or 3.75 range, now you're starting to talk about real step forwards and progress, and that's kind of where things start to get really exciting. So I've been extraordinarily impressed by him down the stretch this year, and I'm really eager to see what he adds in the off season to kind of augment his arsenal, because he could still use a third or a solid fourth pitch.
In terms of their farm systems and young guys, including Rodon, the Sox have really had about as good of a year as you could have. Rodon exceeding meeting at least expectations. Anderson exceeding expectations. Spencer Adams seeing like he's keeping on track. Same with Montas. I guess Danish kind of took a step back.
He did.
And then Trey and Mikkels. Mikkelchevsky, he just kind of is what he is. But, like, they didn't have anything go bad with their really good prospects, really. And they don't have many of them, but it's nice.
Yeah, and then you get Carson Fulmer, and it's you know, you're injecting some more guys that you do well with. And so
I don't know if you saw Callis's article on Fulmer, but the number one thing that Capra talked about was teaching him to pitch more upright, which is...
Yep, stand tall.
You know, they talked about how, because he's 6'1", especially, they really want to get him to pitch more upright, and that's very White Sox.
Extraordinarily White Sox. So.
Which means he's going to be up in the majors next year as a starter and exceeding expectations. I love that pick.
Yeah, that was a tremendous pick. I think that a lot of people were worried about the effort and his delivery and are thinking that, you know, it's going to be a relief profile all the way. But as you alluded to, it's a profile that the White Sox do extraordinarily well with. And, I mean, if Cooper can turn around Fulmer, I don't know. Like, what is the reputation on Cooper if he turns Fulmer into a starter and an adequate starter? Because if you really look at the signature arms that he has, like, yeah, everybody has mess ups, and Smarge is definitely a big black mark. But I don't know, man. That's really, 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 really good work. It's extraordinarily good work with what he's done with regards to the White Sox pitching prospects. And
he has, you know, kept them from being a laughingstock of an organization, almost single-handedly. Him and Herm Schneider, basically. Because with as bad as they've drafted, and it's not like they haven't drafted pitch, like they haven't drafted position players, but they really haven't drafted pitchers either, other than Sale. That whole rotation is guys that they didn't draft. Danks was obviously a good prospect, but they turn Floyd around. They turn Danks around. They make Quintana into something, and they've held their own as a great pitching organization basically in my lifetime. And Cooper's been basically the pitching coach all of my lifetime, and it's really amazing. And it's the only reason why they haven't ever been the worst team in baseball.
Yeah, it's. You know, it's just really impressive to go up and down. They maximize every single dude, basically. you know, they maximize a very high percentage of the pitches that they get. And it's just, it's, I don't know. I'm really excited to see what Fulmer does. And I'm very excited to see what the plan is with Montas and what they want to do. Cause I keep saying it. I think that that's a guy that you want to ideally become a multi-inning reliever. And if you can do it, it really helps alleviate some of the stress in your bullpen.
Is there an org that has a better, like, pitching core other than the Mets, obviously, because they just got those monsters out there? But other than them, is there an org that has a better pitching core than the White Sox?
You can make the argument that the Rangers are in there.
Okay.
But,
like,
yeah.
I always forget about Darvish being there. Cause
yeah.
Go that's going to be scary next year.
Well, it's going to be terrifying. Cole Hamels and Yu Darvish, and they're already made the playoffs this year. I people made fun of that trade too. People really made fun of that trade.
On what basis?
Yeah,
it's too much money. Is usually the problem, but yeah, the Rangers. That's a good one. The Indians, maybe, I guess. But I'm not a huge Kluber fan, as good as he was last year.
They're it's Brian Hickey, right? Their pitching coach?
No, it's Mickey Callaway.
Mickey Callaway. Oh, man. Big brain fart on my. He does well. He does really well, and he deserves a lot of credit. But I think that the stable of guys that they have don't necessarily always have the type of staying power that you'd ideally like for those types of projects. So. I think you can certainly make the argument. I would probably put the White Sox in the top three. Really solidly.
No one touches that Mets team, though. That's a thing for... But they're going to have to trade Harvey, because that's a toxic situation. But even then, you got Syndergaard, Mats, DeGrom, and Wheeler's coming back.
DeGrom has, like, the best right-handed – or the second-best right-handed fastball in the National League, which is really weird.
Who's the best, Arrieta?
It's either Arrieta or Cole.
Okay.
Garrett's got a really good fastball. Garrett Cole's got a tremendous fastball. A lot of people – it's just the way that he mixes and sequences his events that really makes that fastball pop. It's a lot of velocity. It's really heavy velocity, and it's got some real run, but – but the separator for him is just—he just backs it up with these two curveballs where he modifies the shape, and then all of a sudden you get 97 up and in at you. It's not a comfortable at bat.
The pitcher's running fastball that struck out LaRoche by like 3 feet.
It's not
this year.
Yeah, it's not cool. It's not.
I remember that pitch. That pitch was just insane.
Yeah.
Even though LaRoche is garbage, I mean, I guess yeah. Jose Fernandez also has a really good right-handed fastball. But
yeah, I keep forgetting he's alive.
Yeah, me too.
I do keep forgetting. Yeah,
Marlins will do that.
Also, his health track record—that's becoming to be scary. Like UCL and now shoulder surgery, or not surgery. He's not getting shoulder surgery, but shoulder soreness. Like that's not good. That's a red flag.
Not what you want.
He was stupid good in 2014 before he went down.
Nope.
Mal, how much EJ have you watched?
Eric Johnson, my boy.
Is he still your boy?
No, he's fine. He's a four starter. He's back into the rotation, dude. It's four pitches. None of it's really outstanding. It's just kind of there. I mean, probably first dude to get pushed out of the rotation. When is Dink's up? Is that contract ever going to end?
One more year. I'm fine with that. With what he's become, I'm totally fine with him as a 4 or 5 type.
Yeah, so you're talking about Sale, Quintana, Dink's, Rodon, Eric Johnson to start the year, and then you're probably going to push out Johnson for Fulmer if you think he's ready. So
I feel like the rotation slides decently below average if Quintana gets sold for offensive help, at least for the start of the year, though.
Yeah, I think that's the trick, but...
But the Quintana thing, if you're selling that dude for position help, you're getting a lot back, so it's a trade you can maybe afford to make.
Yeah, you want to get Greg back, Greg Polanco.
Yeah, that's the dude that I... Either that or, I mean, the crazy trade that the crazy trade that kind of makes sense is Quintana plus low end guys for Puig.
Yeah.
But that really depends on how much the Dodgers' new front office cares about money saving, because Quintana's a lot of his value is in that he's cheap, and but so is Puig's. So
someone like Montes could really help that Dodgers.
Yeah,
at ball club.
No, I think Quintana and Montes for Puig is a reasonable package, but it really depends on what that Dodgers team wants to do, and also if Jose Abreu wants Puig on his team.
Yeah, that's a big one. I know the narrative is that we all exaggerate the whole Puig is an asshole thing, but he's kind of an asshole.
Yeah, so. The Molly Knight book kind of showed, like, he's got a nuclearly bad makeup clubhouse presence.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was also kind of the rep on Josh Donaldson, and he's going to win an MVP.
Yeah, it matters less when you win, obviously. It's reductive as hell, but it matters a hell of a lot less when you win.
So, like, is it Abreu wouldn't want to deal with that kind of thing, or is it too much of a burden to put on Abreu to be kind of, like, the calming influence for that sort of thing?
I think both, probably.
Like, he can't just hang out with Jose Abreu, listen to Christian disco music, and chill out?
I just think that it's clear that Abreu is your dude, so you just kind of have to make sure that's going to work out okay. I mean, chemistry is a thing in baseball. It's a very real.
And I remember, like, when I was reading up on, like, Jose Abreu talking up league when the Sox played the Dodgers, like, it was a lot of, like, yeah, like, Abreu, like, poo-pooed it, like, yeah, that dude can do him, he's a lot of fun, but it definitely wasn't, like, it didn't seem exactly like I want to be with that dude on my team.
It wasn't the same way you talked about Cespedes.
Right.
No, yeah.
I would love Cespedes too, but that dude's going to get a lot of money, and that dude's going to get money that I'd be a lot more worried about than Hayward's money.
I think it's going to be really interesting if the Mets end up paying him, but
I think that's the dude that scares. That's the dude who I could totally see at this free agent crop getting money and being a bust, more so than Hayward, definitely more so than Upton. I actually like Upton with the White Sox. I think that profile plays really well in the cell.
Yeah,
but.
You could take him out of the field a lot. He kept
trading. Yeah, you could DH him.
He's not that bad defensively, is he?
No.
No, but you just don't have to.
Yeah.
You basically have him and Melky split time.
Yeah, I like that. I like that dude. Obviously, like Hayward, but I like Dexter Fowler, too.
Really, I think like that the Cubs basically have to re-sign him, so I just can't. I don't see him escaping via free agency.
But they're signing Jason Hayward.
Breaking camp with Albert Almora as your starting center fielder when he can barely hit passably at AA seems like it would be a really bad idea for a contending team.
It'd be a big-time stretch. I still am on the Almora boat, but the tepid Almora boat. I don't know. I would think that Dexter Fowler is a tremendous fit here as well, but man.
I think Fowler is going to get something around the lines of 5 years, $90 million. Something's going to surprise people because that dude's pretty young, coming off a really good year.
With on-base skills.
Yeah.
So. I think he's got almost 20 home runs this year.
Yeah, that dude is a little different than Eaton, but they're pretty similar profiles in that they're now that Eaton somehow has power.
Yeah, I don't know how sustainable that is.
I mean, his home runs don't look like cheapies.
Yeah, but it's the goofiest damn swing ever.
It's a line drive swing that he gets lift on.
It's weird. He had a couple like weird uppercuts, and like watching a tiny man like that do an uppercut is really bizarre.
Yeah. It's not great. He ended up with, yeah, you're right. He ended up with a much different profile than what I was thinking heading into the year. Much different.
I really like Adam Eaton.
Yeah, he's going to be good. I'm a fan.
Just would be nice if he did. They have, I tweeted this the other day, they have such a strong core. They're paying Eaton, Sale, Quintana, Rodon, Abreu. Was that it? Yeah, they're paying those five guys like less than $40 million combined. And they can't build a team around it. Like,
and no one ever gets hurt.
And no one ever gets hurt. They've missed one starting pitcher has missed a start all year. No one in the last, in every game since opening day.
Oh my God, that was a hideous collision in St. Louis or Pittsburgh.
Well, what happened?
Jesus. Someone might get me knocked unconscious. Like, I don't know if it's playing center or in left, but like it looks like Piscotty like took a knee to the forehead.
They moved Hayward out of center, so.
Peter
Borges?
Borges.
I like that guy.
Well,
that was one of those dudes that I was like, oh, is he ever going to hit? Because if he hits, he'll be really good.
Never hit.
Yeah, and I'm not touching Jackie Bradley for the same reason.
Yeah. Everybody's getting real excited about the Jackie Bradley thing. I think you called that one, James.
I told, yeah, but I'm kind of doing the same thing where I feel myself analyzing September baseball way too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had questions prepared to ask you about Eric Johnson's pitch selection.
No,
I feel like
I might
be wasting my time.
No, dude.
You guys are telling me Jackie Bradley's not going to slug 500 in the majors?
1,000%.
All right, speaking of, here's a serious question. Carlos Rodon, his whiffs went down during this hot stretch, and I've convinced myself that I should not be worried about such a thing because he's the type of guy where you know the stuff is always going to be there, and it's a lot more important to see him commanding his fastball and working efficiently and getting ahead of the count and just kind of like getting through innings very smoothly and not worrying about like whether or not his whiff percentage is the same as it usually is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that comes down to kind of like pitch selection. I'm not worried about it. Like, it's, you know, you're going to learn different things at different points when you make your initial major league debut. So it's, I would assume without directly looking at the numbers that even if the whiffs are down, they're not like terribly below average, like league average. And also, if they're down, I would suspect that either the changeup usage is high or the fastball command is being emphasized. And, you know, he's learning how to be either efficient or how to have more command or perhaps both. So, no, I don't think that's going to be an incredibly large concern.
So I shouldn't worry about Eric Johnson throwing like 80% fastballs for some reason?
Well, he's not that important, so.
He's going to be like a number four starter.
Yeah, those guys throw like 80% fastball.
When your one through three is Sale, Quintana, and if Rodon jumps, you can have a bad five and an okay four.
Yeah.
If you just get innings out of those guys, and I mean, it kind of hurts when your offense sucks, too. But
this is a really bad collision.
Yeah, they're taking Piscotty off on a stretcher.
Oh, Piscotty's out.
Crushed in the forehead with a knee at full speed.
That's not good.
They're not talking. They're taking a card out to him. It looks like a football collision, or like the aftermath of a football concussion.
And we're getting split screen of Matt Carpenter basically having a breakdown, which I'm sure he'll appreciate.
Oh, Piscotty's not moving, huh?
Yeah, it looks scary. So this is going to be weird podcasting.
Oh, man. I just hope he's okay. As okay as he can be after that type of collision. I just saw it. That's...
Yeah, why are there guys in suits walking up to him?
That's not... No, that's...
Yeah.
Oh, now they just cut away to Sano mashing the ball. Oh, it's so pretty.
Yelsey knows going to be a problem. So is Francisco Lindor.
Man. All right, well. Speaking of Lindor, that guy's got like 11 home runs. That's weird.
Considering he's played like half a season.
Yeah.
And if he's a 10 home run a year guy, he's incredible with that defense.
Yeah, that's a 7.
And so now that's a 7 too.
Yeah, that's a really, really high OFP thrown on that.
What do we make of Byron Buxton, who just looks terribly overmatched?
I've gotten several questions about the Byron Buxton thing in my chat already, just sitting in my queue. And the only thing I can tell you is that he's a teenager. And it's going to happen when you're a teen and you're not Alex Rodriguez or Bryce Harper.
He now turns 22 in 3 months.
Oh, he turns 22? Damn it. That's right. Sorry.
My bad. That's amazing if he was in the majors.
Yeah. My bad. Well, that changes the complexion, but the thing that I would say to that, then, is that that's a bad collision. Is that, he missed some developmental time with some pretty high-level injuries and didn't necessarily get as many plate appearances as you'd like from a top prospect.
And they keep happening.
Yeah, they keep happening, and they keep kind of really stunting his development, and just, he hasn't had a full year in 2 or 3 years, I believe. So it's just hard to get on track when you're constantly getting hurt like that.
Yeah, he's played something like 110 games this year. Last year he played like 40 games.
This guy gave a wave, so that's good.
Okay, that's really good.
Is the White Sox competitive window a realistic idea?
Given
that they're still kind of patching this team together?
Okay. In a vacuum, considering the core, considering everything else that they have going on, and the fact that they have Don Cooper, yes. Considering the financial constraints, I just can't really see how you think this is going to be feasible without opening up your pocketbooks.
Like, you can't pretend to be a contender in Chicago with the holes that they have and be running out below league median payrolls.
You can't do it.
Like, especially like I said, with that core, you're paying $35 million to that core and yet you can't win. That's, for one, there's some bad money there, but for two, like, that is just not, you're not spending enough. The Cubs, no. Everyone was like, oh, the Sox are going for 2015, the Cubs are going for the future. Like, heading into this year, that was a common remark, and it obviously didn't turn out that way, but the Cubs have put $20 million more into this season than the White Sox.
Yep.
In a year where they're focusing on prospects. If you're a team in Chicago, you should be running out $140 million payroll if you're going to be contending.
And this is after they, like, blatantly refused to eat money for the PV and Rios deals and wound up getting stuff like Avisail Garcia and Lourie Garcia.
You know, I really miss the Jake Peavy fastball thing. But yeah, that was, you just, I don't know. You can't effectively sell off given the current prospect hugging that is happening to organizations all up and down Major League Baseball and expect to come away with prospects that are worth the shit. You can't. Like, it's very, very difficult. And I just don't understand what the thought process is when you're willing to spend some money in the bullpen and you're going to sign Adam LaRoche. But then when it comes time to, like, really start plugging some holes, you get gun shy. Or when it comes time to, like, it's the deadline, we really need to figure out what we want to do, you get gun shy. Like, there's something off within the evaluation process somewhere up high when it comes to either the contracts or self-evaluation, and it's just off, and it's been off for a long time.
They're better off than the Bears, though, right?
Oh God, don't even.
But the Bears, at least they're going to get a first overall pick or whatever, because they're so bad. I mean, Bears. the Bears are an absolute mess.
I haven't watched a single game all year, but I just saw what's been happening today, just like looking at, like, oh my god. They're literally just selling off all the starters 3 years and 3 games in the season.
Yeah, they got Allen and Bostic today.
There is nothing quite like a football fire sale.
Because it has to happen so early.
Yeah, it happens literally 3 games after the season.
Their deadline is like week 6. It's a fun line to tell season ticket holders. We're about 20% away to the season, but it's fucked. Sorry.
Yeah, but do the Bears really have to worry about selling out tickets? They'll just tell people that they had the 85, and they'll get tickets. They'll have Ditka go to people season ticket holders' houses.
Can we talk about how low key terrible this Bears franchise has been for the better part of 30 years now?
Oh, it's been as bad, like. It's been so bad. I mean, it is a reason. Like, Chicago sports up until 2005 were so. We didn't have
Bulls
a championship.
Okay.
I guess the Bulls. The Bulls.
Yeah, you're forgetting about that whole MJF thing.
Yeah, sorry. I was a 3 when he won his last championship.
Don't say that. Don't say that. 3?
I think so. What
you were 3?
What was the date of the last game of the last championship?
It had to be June of 98.
June 6th of 98.
Yeah, it just turned 3.
Good God.
That was 3 when they won their first championship.
James, let's call a truce and kill Ethan.
No, it wasn't. I was 4. God damn it.
James, seriously, let's call a truce and beat the shit out of Ethan.
Oh, he takes us. It's gonna be embarrassing. Very compact.
Three.
My favorite thing about the Bears is their Wikipedia article, 1986 to 2003, is just all called post Super Bowl.
They have one championship in the Super Bowl era. And then the White Sox have had one championship in the last 98 years. And then the Cubs have had no World Series in the last 100 years. And before the Blackhawks started winning everything, they hadn't won in years.
Sox haven't won 90 games since 2006. That's pretty much like the baseline. If you want to be in the playoffs, you should try to win 90
games. Win games.
They haven't made the playoffs since I was in braces.
They made it once. It was like a total crap division, and they had to play a 163 game.
I was really excited about Lupe Fiasco the last time they made the playoffs.
Same.
Yeah.
I snuck my older sister into a Lupe Fiasco concert.
Yeah, no, that I remember being really about that.
I was in braces. I was in braces at game 163 wearing a black shirt and waving a towel. I was 13 years old.
I was really, really stoked about my... I was using the word stoked, and I was really stoked about my off-campus apartment when they were in the playoffs.
I think it was still okay to wear Enichi jeans.
I've lived, like, my entire adult life since the White Sox made the playoffs.
When they were in the playoffs, my favorite band was TV on the Radio.
I had several pairs of Timbs the last time they were in the playoffs. Several pairs.
You guys were probably like my age when they were in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Older.
2 years older.
I have a pair of Tim's now. No, actually I have 2, but one of them's like a pair of shoes, so they're not Tim's. They're just...
No, yeah, they're... Shoes.
When they're in the playoffs, I was driving a 1996 Ford Taurus SHO.
You know, I was driving a 94 Ford Taurus SE. Or LE.
I was 3 years away from driving. I didn't have my learner's permit yet.
Like, no matter what, Ethan's stories is going to make me feel more depressed.
Didn't Kanye release Graduation in 2008?
So. Why do I want to think that was 2006?
Oh. No, Late Registration was right when I was a freshman in college in the fall of 2005.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
Oh, Graduation dropped on September
11, 2007. Oh, so we split the difference. Okay.
Oh, 808s and Heartbreak was 2008.
So many guys on the 808 team don't get paid to play baseball anymore.
AJ is the one who survived.
I still have, I think, I have a playoff program from the 2008 team, and there's some really fun names. Do you guys remember Horacio Ramirez?
I do. Oh, my God.
Bobby Jenks nailed down the only playoff win of 08. He had lost his career to alcoholism and has sobered up since that time.
Does he still have blonde hair?
No.
Oh.
I don't think so.
So positive developments for Bobby Jenks.
Did the Sox ditch Juan Uribe in 08?
Afterward.
He was a part-time starter. So it was, will people like stop sharing the GIF?
I don't know why people do that.
Can we just stop with the GIF? Like, here's this really terrible, scary collision where a man had to be carted off.
My wife would be all about it if she were here. But she's a med student. They are basically gore hounds, and no one criticizes them for it because they fix people. But they're sick bastards.
Yeah.
Juan Uribe's last year was with the White Sox in 08. He's going to go to the fucking playoffs this year in 2015. I guess he's hurt now, but like, you know, if the Sox had gotten at the deadline what the Mets got, if the Sox had gotten Cespedes, gotten Uribe, and Tyler Clippard, it's a pretty good chance, given how shitty the second wild card is, that they're right there for the wild card.
Yeah.
It's such a tram trash pile, and they still can't make it.
Right.
That's been their story for 10 years. AL Central is pretty weak. We don't have a great team, but we think it'd probably slide in. Oh, no, we're even worse than we thought. That's the freaking MO.
The AL Central looks weak the next year, though.
It always looks weak. It's always weak. And they don't even like play 500 balls. So what are they even talking about? Like, oh, we just need like 88 wins. Like you can't win 82.
Or they'll get real frustrating and win 84, but never be in it. Never feel like they're in it.
Oh yeah,
84 wins, be four games back. Never felt like you were in it at all.
Or talk about like, oh, we were in first place this year in 2009. It's like you won 79 games.
And in 2012, they were in first place. The one good year we've had, basically, since the 08 year, they were in first place, like, 85% of the year and wound up, like, losing the division by, like, four games.
The 2010 team was so much better than the 2012 team.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, 2012 was the warmed-over leftovers of that team, and the division was so much crappier that they almost won still.
The 2010 team was good. Then they add Adam Dunn. They add a full year of Alex Rios. And they go under 500.
2010 team wins the division. If they don't let freaking Jim Thome walk across the damn street.
And remember, it wasn't just like they were never going to sign Jim Thome. They almost signed it. There was that week during...
He played for a fucking $1.5 million.
During Sox Fest. Like, it's like Willie Sign or...
Do we want the flexibility of Mark Kotze, who cannot play the outfield nor hit anymore?
And that Jim Thome home run off Matt Thornton in September is just the saddest
thing. It just hurts so much.
And I think that ball's in orbit still. It probably passes around once every 2.5 years.
The thing that makes it the worst is just that like it was the absolute correct thing to do. You give it to Matt Thornton and you let him try to pitch out of it. And it just didn't even matter. Jim Thome did not give a shit.
He was so good. I hope that dude makes the Hall of Fame.
I don't think he will, but I'm in the same boat.
I knew they were done before that when they did a ritual before a game where they burned all of Mark Kotze's bats to get the bad juju out.
Why did we do this?
This podcast has been really depressing.
It hasn't been on topic for like 35 minutes.
No. There's like 5 minutes where we're like, did we just watch someone die on a baseball field?
Yeah, this is literally our text group.
And it'll be like, it won't be interesting to really anyone else.
No.
James, you might have to do a lot of editing.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Jesus.
How long ago did you text me saying we should wrap things up?
That was like no, 2 minutes.
That was 2 minutes ago.
Though we probably should have wrapped things up, at least for the sake of this podcast, like a half hour ago.
Yeah, because it's just been... We took the worst trip down memory lane.
This will be like... We're going to have to put a trigger warning on this for...
trigger warning. Really bad White Sox fast. Trigger... No, wait, trigger warning. Brent Lillibridge is disgusted with this.
But that wasn't even what it... It wasn't even bad at the point when we were talking about...
Mark Gotze, then. The trigger warning is definitely Mark Gotze.
I brought up Horacio Ramirez. I
can't believe they put that guy in the lineup like 2 hours after they burned his bats on the field.
I totally can, because that's just how dysfunctional the whole thing was.
Totally. He lit all of his stuff on fire. We thought it would help.
I'm just going to mention one more bad name for the hell of it. Sox is still fucking paying Jeff Kepinger.
All right, I'm out. I'm out. You did it. That was the name.
So who are they going to spend that Kepinger money on? Coming off the books.
Gordon Beckham. They're going to pay Gordon Beckham some
more. Mark Conte had 3 less F-war career than Paul Konerko.
Well, Paul Konerko never, like, face-planted in the middle of center field in Busch Stadium during the NLCS because his manager started in center field for some goddamn reason.
I wish the Indians made the playoffs so we could see playoff Mike Aviles in center field.
No, I don't wish that. I don't wish that at all. It's terrible.
Had he ever played center field before this year?
I feel like when you play center field, it looks like he's never played baseball.
Well, because playing Mike Aviles in center field is like the White Sox throwing, I don't know, like... it's like them throwing Carlos Sanchez
in center. How about like 40-year-old Ken Griffey Jr. in a win-or-go-home game?
And he made a really good throw.
Like after taking the escalator down to the ball.
Leading up to that game, every single flare out to center field, it would take Griffey like 6 seconds to get into the screen to field it. Like the cameraman would be there.
They had and
Griffey's ass would be there 6 seconds later.
They had an outfield of Jermaine Dye, Ken Griffey Jr., and Carlos Quinton in a one-game playoff.
Griffey's horse-drawn carriage pulled up to the ball. He hopped out and gunned it home.
Is that the worst playoff outfield of all time?
It's in contention. Defensively, it's like super high on the list.
Like, you have corner outfielders that can't move and a 40-year-old Ken Griffey Jr.
Seriously.
John Danks deserves to be in the Hall of Fame for pitching 7 shutout with that.
Oh, man, that game was so much fun, and now I'm sad that John Danks doesn't have a fuck you 94-mile-an-hour cutter.
Alright, I really have to go.
Yeah, has the mic been picking up my roommate playing Future?
No, but I really wish it was.
Yeah, I haven't heard it.
Alright, is it cool if I cut out?
Yeah, I think we should have cut out.
No, we're going to keep going without you.
Okay. Alright, thanks for having me on.
Alright, later.
Later.
See ya.